So this is the first podcast, High News podcast. With today, we're talking to Oz Davis of Ball in Europe. Howdy, Hi. Oz.
Hi. Good morning.
So we are we're in the world of EuroBasket 2013 now. The qualification tournament ended last night with the final five teams rounding out the field, and we had Serbia, Turkey, Latvia, Belgium, and Sweden booked the final spots. So the 24-team field is now complete for EuroBasket 2013. We're going to talk a little bit about what happened last night and a little bit about the qualification tournament. And then, you know, where some of the teams are and maybe look forward a little bit and look back a little bit. So, Oz, why don't we just start with your thoughts on last night? Serbia needed a victory and got it and booked their spot in EuroBasket 2013 in Slovenia. What are your thoughts on, obviously, Serbia was the big team that...
In summary, it all comes down to this. No surprises, unfortunately. In fact, basically, your only surprise is how much it took for Serbia and Turkey to actually advance. Unfortunately, the miracle run of Azerbaijan is over. Germany broke their hearts. What else? Estonia, their run is over. Those were the only two teams that I was looking at too.
I was watching
for interesting reasons.
I was watching the Azerbaijan game last night and really kind of hoping that Azerbaijan would maybe do it. Germany were through already, and they only had the perfect run or not, and whereas Azerbaijan first time would have been the first time ever in EuroBasket, but yeah
I believe that this is as high as they've ever gotten is this level. It'll be interesting, it'll be nice. They depended a lot on their American import, who really surprised in the six games that he played. Now I'm not sure what the story was about that on Charles Davis. Do you have any idea? He went for 25 points. He went for double-digit rebounds, I believe.
I know he's played the last few years in Turkey. I don't know how they got the Azerbaijan citizenship out of that one. I know there's the same like Turkish flag in the Azerbaijani flag. Maybe that's enough. But no, he's been playing in Turkey for quite a few years. And just watching that game last night, I was really impressed with his all around game. I mean, he's from Alabama in the States, and I mean he's definitely a star, and I think that he's got a big contract somewhere else in Europe coming up in the very near future, I think.
Yeah, he was a beast. I was just wondering why he only played six games. He didn't play all the games, and I was wondering why he missed a couple. He was never injured, so I don't know what happened there. In any case, yeah, I was looking at that. I guess some of the stories, because things shook out as expected. I think a lot of the stories are on the individual players. I think that the story in this tournament is a lot about trends. I think it typically is. This is like a marker. This is like a check to see where your national program stands, where your national team organization stands. I don't know if they're ready to push the panic button in places like Turkey and Serbia. Serbia might be a good idea. I think to kind of blow up the team a little bit, think about things a little bit. I think there's too much age on that team. I think there's too much old mindset on that team. And I've been quite obsessed with their play at the point guard position, especially this team lives and dies by Milos Teodosic. And as of late, going back to the EuroLeague Final Four tournament, he has put together quite a history of blowing up in the fourth quarter in big games. As long as Serbia is cruising, no problem. He'll give you a 9 for 16. He'll dish a bunch of assists, turn it over maybe once. If it comes down to the clutch, it blows up. He's averaging something. He averaged something like 3 turnovers in the fourth quarter in those losses in this tournament. And, you know, the team blew a lead or could not catch up to a lead in the fourth quarter every time, despite the talent on that roster. Something just isn't working in Serbia. And I think if they run with the same team and the same coaching staff and the same program directors in the next tournament, they're going to go out early. They're going to go out early. It is time to make changes there.
But so what changes do you see seeing being possible? I mean, obviously Teodosic is their man at the point, yes. and there's so much that, you know, the point guard is such a critical position. You know, do you see them trying to install somebody else?
Well, it would be nice, but I've been, you know, this pops up for the last 2-3 years in Serbian basketball news, is that, like, oh my God, there's no money, the program's in trouble, the youth is not being developed properly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that, you know, there's this trickle-up effect. I think that they need young talent, but I don't know who that young talent is. I don't know. By all accounts, the Serbian league does not do a good job at developing talent. And so I don't know who might come up, but I think that, you know, in a club, we would call this a rebuilding mode. I think the time has come in Serbia for this. Unfortunately, they haven't been doing it organically. One of the things that, you know, one of the other trends that I notice is you look at the teams on the way up. You know, I'm looking at teams like Ukraine. I'm looking at teams like Georgia. Georgia impressed me quite a bit. Tough loss to Latvia, but otherwise they impressed me. And Germany, you know, these teams are organically developing. They're bringing up the young players. They're bringing up these, you know, prototypical European players who are maybe, you know, 6'9", long wingspan and can shoot the three, you know, the Mirza Teletovic's of the world. Mm-hmm. I don't see this happening in Serbia. And to some extent, I don't see this happening in Turkey. Turkey does have young talent, but they're not bringing it up to the national team. Poster boy for this is, of course, Anish Kanter, who was a force in the last Eurobasket and certainly would have been awesome in this one.
Just really quick, going back to the Serbs, I mean, they do have a couple of young point guards coming up. There's Svetkovic, Alexander Svetkovic, and Milinovic, both of them are 93s, and I think they have a 94 as well. Matic, Vasily Matic or something, I can't remember, but, you know, I mean, a 93 and a 94, Matic, you know, that's still, you know, there's still, you know, that's still kind of far away. That's the problem. I mean, Tepic is there, you know, but he's not a point guard, and so, yeah, and with Turkey, I mean, Turkey, unless they play at home, they're not going to be much of a threat at any tournament, it seems, right?
It seems like it, doesn't it? It seems like it. They get it up for the home crowd, and it's just like, otherwise, they don't play to the level. Of course, looking forward beyond, you know, who might be going down, I should say that it was nice to see Italy playing back up to a proper level in this tournament. I wanted to touch on them. The big three that they have will be a nice combination in the next Eurobasket. Gallinari was awesome in this tournament. He does not make my all-tournament team, but he does make the second team.
Man, you're hard. We gotta wait. I can't wait to see this team.
Well, you know, I tried to go off the radar at points a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
But, no, I bumped him in favor of Omri Caspi. I loved the play of Caspi. I mean, he shot almost 2 of 3 from 2-point land. He's 65.7%, I got here. I mean, he carried that team. He, speaking completely subjectively, he has that skill to make his teammates better. Several of his teammates posted their best tournament ever, statistically. And, you know, I do not believe this is a coincidence. This is the first time he's played with the national team since before the last Eurobasket because he was injured. They didn't play last year. And this is the first time he's ever started for that team. And the effects were fantastic. Fantastic. He had a great tournament. I don't think Caspi and a cast of thousands, as they used to say, is going to be enough at the next Eurobasket. But it's good to see that they're staying competitive, and it's good to see that they're, you know, exploiting the young talent like, and I'm going to kill this name, Lior Ilyahu.
That sounds actually pretty good. I think that's actually pretty good.
Close.
Yeah, that's actually, I think, pretty good.
You know, I like this. I like the growth in Israel. I don't think that they're ever going to be a massive European power like, you know, in the 70s or whatever. I don't think they're ever going to be a power like Maccabi Tel Aviv on the club level. But, you know, they'll stick around. They'll be in this top tier for a few years to come, I think, this tournament seems to indicate. And then, of course, Montenegro.
I was going to say, in that group was, you know, Israel and Serbia. You know, they were figuring, okay, yeah, we'll probably fight out for a top spot, and then running away undefeated was Montenegro, without their two NBA centers, Nikola Pekovic and Nikola Vucevic.
We had a conversation a few days ago, and I went back and watched a previous game, and I paid attention to the next game, and you touched on the key to this Montenegro team, which was simply switching out Americans.
Yes, Taylor.
Yes, you gave me this tip off. Well, what Montenegro did was, and 2 years ago, I was looking at the official website from 2 years ago today. 2 years ago, they finished officially 21st in the Eurobasket tournament. And one of the reasons for this is because Omar Cook, their naturalized player, was getting way too many touches. He was shoot first guy, and whereas they had all this talent inside, the ball was never going inside. Yeah. It was staying out on the wing with Cook. And so then they bring in, for this tournament, they bring in Taylor Rochesty. And Rochesty, you know, this guy knows how to move the ball. This guy knows how to facilitate. All of a sudden, this team has fewer turnovers than almost any team in the tournament. I mean, Rochesty himself goes 43 assists against 16 turnovers. They're constantly dumping the ball inside. The spread on this team, I was looking at this today, the spread on this team, I've got 9 players who scored between 7 and 12 points a game and win at least 20 minutes a night. I mean, that's what a transformation. What a transformation. And to this, they're going to bring in, you know, Vucevic and...
Pekovic.
Yeah, Pekovic and Vucevic. I mean, come on.
And,
what a team.
And consider that Bojan Dubljevic is only 20, and Nikola Ivanovic is only 18. And they both had good tournaments as well. I mean, you know... I think Montenegro is you know, is the exact same situation that you can say, you know, Serbia. It's a small, you know, relatively small country that just produces all of this basketball talent. I mean, they, you know, you look at the only question I have a little bit is, okay, Dasic had a, you know, Vladimir Dasic had an unbelievable run in the qualifiers. What's going to happen when Pekovic and Vucevic come in? You know, how is the mix? You know, is there going to be enough, you know, distribution? Is there going to be enough playing off one another there to really go far?
Well, like I always say, I think that in international tournaments, and especially European tournaments like this, the point guard position is exaggerated in importance.
Yeah.
You need a playmaker, period. Okay, so it's all going to be about Rochesty, first of all. Okay, second of all, if you check out what Montenegro did in this tournament. I mean, it was all about working the ball inside. A guy like Blagoda Sekulic looked absolutely brilliant in this tournament simply because Rochester was able to create the shots for him. Now, you replace or you swap minutes between like Dubljevic, who was a monster on the offensive boards. He had something like 4.2 offensive boards per game. He was one of the leaders. And Blagoda Sekulic, you know, you trade these two guys out for the NBA guys? How can that be bad?
Yeah.
They're going to have to find more backcourt somewhere.
Yeah.
Because they're running with about, you know, if these are chess pieces, they're running with about 8 queens and 1 pawn. You know, they got to bring somebody into the backcourt.
I like Seljovic, actually both of them. But I mean, Seat I think is just a little bit too young. He's last year he was here in Germany playing for Oldenburg, I think, and you know, he got some good experience there. He was also playing like Euro Cup or whatever. So you know, it was his first time away from being home, and I know he's moved up to a bigger club. I'm not sure exactly where it is, maybe Italy, but you know, I think he needs to develop. That'll give them a guy on the wing that that is really a solid player. But yeah, I mean, you know, you look at all those bigs, right? Do they have the bigs to match with Spain? As crazy as that may sound.
Wow. Okay, so you could throw out on the floor for Montenegro at one time, you could throw out Pekovic, Vucevic, and Dasic.
Exactly. Exactly.
At the same time. They could play ball. They could play ball. I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop in Spain. Spain, to a lesser extent, is going to feel the Serbia effect sooner or later. That team just ain't getting any younger. And while, you know, there is much to be said to keeping the nucleus together, one of these days we're going to see that drop. It's a matter of time. I don't think it's going to be this next tournament, but it's a matter of time. And I think one of the teams that's going to fill this void is Montenegro. I mean, there's just no end to the talent and the possibilities of this team. Really a positive tournament for them. Really positive.
Definitely, definitely. Maybe say a couple words about Croatia. Obviously, another loaded team, and for the last 5 or 6 games, they also brought in their uber prospect, Dario Saric, who, you know, he finishes his, you know, finishes winning the gold at the U18 European Championship, and then goes into the national team, and you know, averages like 9 and 5 and 3 assists, and this guy's a stud, man. I mean, talk about Croatia.
I mean, at Ball in Europe, I habitually refer to him as the next big thing out of Croatia. I mean, there's no limit for this guy. I mean, and he steps it up for tournaments. He's even better in tournaments than he is in club play, in youth club play. You know, I mean, he can do it all. He's an animal. Even more aggressive than a Tony Kukoc. You know, and still has that touch, still has that leadership ability. Wow. Tremendous upside on this kid. I was also happy to see Croatia go through because, like Serbia, there's a lot of grumbling. There's a lot of talk about lack of developing talent. But I think that even beyond Saric, I think that, you know, the development is showing and the future is bright again.
Well, they have a couple of great kids. Mario Hezonja. Yeah. Mario Hezonja, I was just at the U17 World Championships, and this guy hadn't played in a year. He broke his leg or something, and then had a case of mono. Hadn't played all year, and he comes in and you know, was basically, you know, MVP candidate. And then they have this Dominic Mavra as well, who's the same year as Saric, and I mean, those three are just huge talents, and you know, I mean, you see the U18s, they won the gold. I mean, they're loaded.
You have a book on the youth talent in Europe, whereas I have maybe a pamphlet But even an idiot like myself knows that Croatia is awesome in these youth tournaments lately. U16s, U18s, 17s. I mean, they're constantly like finishing near the top, playing well, playing as a team, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, but that's only been happening in the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, really, that class with Saric and Mavra, you know, that's kind of where it started to come back up. I'll have to get a Croatian basketball expert on to explain that phenomenon, how that change came about. But there's definitely some stars coming out of that place, that's for sure.
It's always nice to see these classic basketball cultures, you know, continue to evolve and such. Again, which is what is so distressing about the Serbian situation.
And it all comes back to Serbia.
Yeah. I mean, really, because there just aren't that many stories in this tournament. I mean, look, you can speculate about Georgia. You know, you can speculate about Ukraine. You can say, okay, Turkey put in just enough effort. You know, they don't play away from home. Da 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 da. Okay, so really, I mean, ultimately, that's the spin on this tournament, is like, what's up with Serbia? You know, how can Israel go there and take them out? I mean, how can Israel take these guys out? They don't have the size. They don't have. I mean, just look at the rosters on paper. They don't have the roster. Yeah. Serbia should be killing this game.
Yeah.
And you know, there's just something wrong there. But that's the nature of these tournaments. I mean, you see this in the European tournaments, just like I do. You go to something like EuroBasket 2011, there's 24 teams in there, and a good 6 or 7 clearly don't deserve to be there. I mean, in this qualifiers right here, Portugal was what, 1-6? 1-7?
0-8.
Something like that? They were in the last EuroBasket.
They were 0-8. They didn't win a game.
0-8. Okay, great.
They lost the twice to Belarus.
When they were 0-6 or whatever. you know, there are just some teams that are just not on the level of the Russias and Frances and Lithuanias.
Sure, I know. But I'm going to argue this, that I actually like this system more. You're going to have a qualifying tournament anyhow. Because you know, you have the teams from the Olympics or the World Championships, now the World Cup, the FIBA World Cup, and so those teams are automatically qualified for EuroBasket. So you need to have qualifiers for this tournament anyhow. So why not? Because they used to have Division A for background here. They used to have Division A and Division B, and most of those teams, you know, Albania, Luxembourg, Portugal, Iceland, and all that, they used to be in Division B and then would have to fight for a spot in Division A, which is actually what happened to Montenegro. When they formed themselves, they formed their federation, they had to go through B to get to A, and now they're, you know, we're talking about them and their inside game maybe battling with Spain, but that's not the point. But I like the fact that, you know, teams like Luxembourg can play a team like Germany, a team like Iceland and Slovakia, you know, that they can play teams like Serbia and Montenegro and Israel, you know, and but that they get a chance to see this level of competition, Cyprus against Croatia, you know, Romania against Bosnia, and you know, so I actually like it because it gives them a bar. They're going to play each of these teams twice, and they know that if they want to get to this level, that they're going to have to play, they're going to have to get better. And so they have to think about how we're going to get better. And that's then the job of the federation or whatever to say, all right, we've got our butts whipped. Do we want to continue to just get our butts whipped? Or do we want to actually compete? I mean, you look at it, three, you know, if you're a five-group team, a five-team group, right? If you can finish third and have a 5-3 record instead of a 4-4 record, you're almost into EuroBasket, you know? So you got to beat, let's say, okay, now just like take, for example, you know, the Belarus, Portugal, you know, Portugal, let's say they beat Belarus twice, right? If they can maybe get one of the games made against a weak Turkey at home, that's three, and then they beat Czech 4, you're 4-4. You know? I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but, you know.
I wonder the last time somebody pulled off two big upsets in a qualifying tournament.
Well, I mean, Azerbaijan was 4-4. Azerbaijan was 4-4.
One upset, one loss can knock you out. That's realistic to talk about. That's why we were still talking about Estonia and Azerbaijan yesterday. It's because one loss, one win, you know, that makes all the difference. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
No, but my point is that I really think that this is a good chance for these teams. You know, I was talking to Anton Gavel. You know, he obviously has so much success with Bamberg, Broza Baskets Bamberg, and he also played for Slovakia this year. Again, he plays for Slovakia every year. And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. It also gives our young players a chance to play against these upper level teams. But that's how you get better. You play against better teams, you get better. If you're gonna get better, that's how you do get better. And I think that for the good of the game, I think that this is a better way than just have, you know, the top two teams in Division B go up and then they play, you know, and then they get their butts whipped because then they haven't seen them at all either, you know?
I would say two things to that. One is, okay, to some extent, I'm just being a grousing sports writer, okay? I have reminded people of the fact that FIBA exists to promote basketball, and the tournaments...
We are basketball!
And the tournaments are just a show of that. You know, the tournaments are like a bonus. The tournaments are an extra. It's all about promoting the game. It's all about growing these national programs. However, with that philosophy in mind, you are correct. Okay, but here's the thing. Playing in the high-level tournaments is no guarantee of future success. I mean, look, FIBA and the International Olympic Committee were flipping out about letting Britain play as the home team in the last Olympics for like 2 years. They were making the Federation guys in Wales and England and Scotland jump through all these hoops, prove that they were going to develop the program, da-da-da-da-da-da. And again, we can go back to Portugal on this one. Look at them. Oh, great, we get to play in Eurobasket, you know, a couple of upsets and we can make the next round. They go 0-6. Then they play in this qualifying tournament. They go 0-8. This program is not developing. You know, and it's almost like, why should a Spain or a France with an awesome record of developing local talent have to like waste their time of ritually playing, you know, Portugal in a Eurobasket tournament? You know, Portugal is no Finland. You know, this is not like a top 20 team, and yet they get to play on these high levels. You know, it almost
Portugal, but Portugal, be, the example with Portugal is that,
a wild card.
Yeah, I mean, Portugal made it last year because they won that additional qualifying tournament, which, you know, I consider is a joke. I'm happy that they got rid of that. At least, you know, if you can't finish in the top three of a five-team group, then you don't deserve to, you know, you don't deserve to be in the Eurobasket anyhow. I think, you know, as we saw, you know, not even Estonia that played well, not even, you know, Bulgaria that played, you know, decently well, not even those teams made it, you know, not even Azerbaijan, not even they made it, you know. So, I mean, this is definitely a much better system to, you know, you still have a chance, you know, and like I said, I think it's good that that the lower teams can see the elite teams, but, you know, they're not going to be, you know, Portugal is not going to be playing against France and stuff because, you know, they don't have to play the French and the Spanish. They don't have to play in these qualification tournaments because they are strong enough then, you know, in the big tournaments where they, you know, don't have to play in these. And then the lower teams aren't making it there. Yeah, I mean...
Well, when all is said and done, the system worked this year. Okay, it did. It worked. Yeah. I mean, with the exception of Britain, unquestionably, the teams that are playing in the Eurobasket are the best teams.
I think Britain, you could argue would still be top 24. I mean, they're definitely
on
the board.
I think they should make an extra tournament with Britain, Estonia, and Azerbaijan, because it doesn't matter who wins it. It's a great story.
But then you only. No, I don't like these additional tournaments, man. I hate these additional tournaments.
Yeah, I love the last one. The last one before Eurobasket, they had to play a 3-game set between Sweden and Hungary for the last spot.
Yeah,
and I mean, naturally Hungary got smoked.
Yeah.
But that was the last qualifier for the last tournament. I mean, they were the last tournament. I swear to God, they were just making it up as they go along.
Yeah, they expanded it and they didn't know what to do with it. So
yeah, they named like 8 or 10 teams or whatever. Then they had a qualifying tournament. Yeah. 6 more teams got in. And then they said, "Oh, surprise! We're going to put in 8 more teams that we're just going to name."
Exactly.
We're just going to pick out of a hat.
All right, so
Ukraine,
we've brought up the bigger Eurobasket. We were both at Eurobasket last summer, and we were dead at about a week and a half.
Oh yeah!
Not to mention 3 weeks longer than World Championships. All right. There's 24 teams. All right, you want to have a bigger party? That's fine. All is good. But all right. I think we should get rid of the second round. Are you okay with that?
We should get rid of the second round. What do you mean?
There's
one pool play and then knockout tournament.
Yeah, sure. If you want to do 6 team groups, 4 of them, take the top 4 teams. You go automatically into a round of 16 knockout, which are more exciting than points. You know, how many points do I have to win by in order not to lose and whatever? Then you have straight knockout. You know, so you shorten the tournament, and you can give the players a little more time in that first round. I mean, they're playing 5 games in 6 days. You look at the football European Championship. You know, earlier this summer, you know, I think they're playing 7 games. You know, if the winner wins, they're playing 7 games in like 31 days or something like that. And you know, these guys are playing the same level. You can't say that the European Championships of basketball is not, you know, the same level as European Championships of football, and competition-wise and intensity-wise.
Absolutely.
And they're playing 5 games in 6 days. That's insane. That's insane. That's insane for us as reporters to have to do that. And I mean, we're not doing anything except just sitting there. And so, I mean, I felt so bad for all those guys last summer. And I think you get rid of the second round, you add a day or two to the first round. You can have day after, you can have back-to-back games in the first, you know, back-to-back days for in the first round. But you have an extra day off, at least one extra day off in the first round. And then you get rid of the stupid second round. Nobody cares anyhow. It's all points and all this other stuff. And listen, if you can't finish top 4 of a top 6 team group, you don't deserve to be in the knockouts anyhow, right?
Yeah.
Then you have a round of 16 instead of quarterfinals.
Shaky. Well, I like this idea, and I'll give you more fuel for your fire. One of the problems with playing these tournaments so extensively, and I'm also talking about the Olympics, is that the schedule itself takes on this overwhelming importance. I mean, we saw this at Eurobasket, at the last Eurobasket. Look. The easiest start was given to Spain. You know, they had to take on like Britain, Portugal, and I think it was Britain and Portugal in the first 2 games. Britain, on the other hand, drew 3 powerhouses in the first 3 games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's basically 3 and you're out. Now, I suggest that if you have this extra preparation time, you know, you might have a shot to pull off the upset. You know, study the game, film more, you know, create something new, surprise them, da-da-da-da-da-da, especially against a team that traditionally gets off to a slow start, like Spain, or in the past, Italy, you know? I mean, that's when, or Turkey these days, you know, that's how you could make the tournament much more exciting. And, of course, expanding the tournament is a good thing. It's basketball. You know, if you want even more games, I mean, this format works on all levels. Everybody in Europe knows it. Everybody in America knows it. This is why the March Madness is such a ridiculous phenomenon. You know, it's because tournament is awesome. In fact, for tournament lovers, Dave, you could get really insane and just say, okay, play in, you know, everybody gets to play, like, games in groups, and then you seed an entire tournament like that. You know, so you're playing 24 teams and you go 0-6 or whatever, and you're seed number 24. You get to take on Spain in the first round. You know, why not? Why not? It's still fewer games than the present system.
Yeah, I mean I think that's the key, is to get fewer games so that to give the players a little bit more rest. And that's my big issue, you know. I don't care about me being, you know, tired at a tournament. That doesn't matter, you know. No, seriously. I mean, these guys, I mean, you know, I mean, it's no surprise that some of these guys in the NBA aren't coming over, because they're like, man, I don't even do this in the NBA 5 games in 6 days. I didn't even do that in the shortened schedule 5 games in 6 days. And they're doing it every Eurobasket. Come on, man. Come on, hey Oz, we gotta get on the bandwagon and get rid of the second round. 24 teams is okay. More teams, more fun, you know. But
do you know anybody in NCAA marketing? Because they could give a presentation that would completely change their minds, I'm sure.
I don't know, man. FIBA Europe is kind of a dinosaur, but they're still our dinosaur. We still love them, so we gotta.
Well, I mean, look. The thing is, every single European tournament and most international tournaments are run like this, you know, pool play tournament, you know, that's it. And so to change it for basketball, even if basketball is a different beast than soccer or water polo, you know, even if it's a different beast, you know, you should, it's tough to induce a new format. You know, it's tough to say, surprise, you know, something completely different. You know, you don't know if that would sell here.
Will football go group stage and then go to the knockout?
For the World Cup, yes.
No, for European Championship as well.
Okay, so how many teams? That's 24 teams?
What do they have? I think they probably have 24, and then top two go through of each group. Maybe it's 32. God, what is it? No, it's not 32. It's not 32.
Well, there has been in the past, anyway. There has been that double pool play.
I just hate it.
In any case,
it's just I think the quality of the games goes down because you have all of these teams saying, "Well, you know, I mean, we're already through. We don't really need to, you know."
Yeah.
I mean, the only good thing is that at least it's not game, you know, day after day. You know, at least there's. You know, they in the two groups, then they have the two, you know, they have the one group play the one day, the other group play the other day, you know, so at least there's game, day off, you know, but, you know, I just think anything that can be done.
It was one of the big disappointments of the last tournament is that France knew that they were already going to go through. They, you know, they wanted a better draw, and so they denied, you know, the fans a proper France-Spain game in the last day of pool play. You know, they just rolled over and then said, okay, we don't care. We'll get to the finals if we're in the other bracket.
That can happen if it's a knockout.
Right, exactly. Exactly. More emphasis on a knockout, more emphasis on individual games, less emphasis on the pool play.
Okay, so let's finish this up real quick. We have a draw on November 18th. Wow. I don't know exactly when the seedings are going to be coming out, but definitely we can talk about the seedings when they're out. Okay. And what that'll mean. Obviously,
how many groups are there?
There'll be four groups of six, with the top three going
Spain, France, Russia,
and probably Slovenia since they're at home.
Right.
I would imagine, but I don't know. That draw will be coming on November 18th, so in just over 2 months. I don't know when the seedings come out.
Do you know how the seedings work? So, for example, is it based on recent results?
It's based on recent results. One second. Let me – this is great radio time here. it's based on their most recent results, basically. Lithuania
is like a 3 seed or something like that.
Well, it would be the Eurobasket 2011 as the most recent.
Oh, okay.
That's the tournament that they take.
Right, so your Olympic teams will be rounding out the twos then. You'll have Lithuania in there. You'll have FYR Macedonia in there at two.
Probably those eight teams. I would imagine GB would also get a top two seed.
I guess they're going to have to. Yep, they're playing in the Olympics.
I don't know if GB does because they. I mean, Slovenia probably will have to because they're one of the host teams. But I don't know if GB would because they didn't really play so well at EuroBasket. So I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest that they'll be a two seed. Not at all for the draw. No way. Not if you're talking about like Lithuania as a two, there's no way you can put Britain as a two. I can't wait to see how high they're going to put Montenegro.
Yeah, exactly.
This show.
Well, but the thing is yeah, but you go by the last results and what'd you say they were 21st last year?
Yeah.
Or 2 years. Yeah. Last summer. So.
Yeah, but in this tournament, they were the
seeding also goes by the last results.
So the qualifiers don't count? Wow! Somebody's gonna get a bad draw with that. If Montenegro's going in,
imagine Montenegro as a five or six seed.
Jeez,
I don't want to be in that group.
Yeah, somebody's gonna be surprised. That's automatic, you know, group of death status right there.
All right, so basically, you know, I mean, obviously, there's Spain and France and Russia. Who do you see as the top challengers for EuroBasket 2013 right now, taking into account what we know now?
Beyond those three?
Yeah.
Wow. Really tough to say. I think that, you know, the most surprising, interesting teams, the Georgias, the Germanys, the Ukraines, they're still a couple years away from seriously competing. I think that this top three, I think Russia's still on the way up. I think the sky is the limit for this team. I like them to win. Spain and France, they're still a few years from fading. That's not going to be a problem. France will return enough of their NBA guys, so they'll be well ahead of the pack. Wow, challengers after that. Well,
what about Greece's kids?
Lithuania, you never know what they're going to bring. You got to like Montenegro. I mean, you know, there's a lot of hype on this podcast about Montenegro, but you got to like them. Italy, I mean, they could make some noise. I really liked what they did in these qualifiers. That's a good-looking team. So, but I don't know. I think you might as well start preparing places at the podium right now.
You think top three would be the same?
Yeah, I think it's Spain, France, and Russia.
It's kind of hard to argue against that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, okay, let's say Kirilenko comes, you know, and all the guns are all, you know, healthy and stuff like that. I mean, you know, they're obviously the cream of the crop, so.
Yeah, they'll return their Cheka Moscow guys. They'll return, you know, at least two of their three or four NBA guys. They'll have enough players. They'll be fine. Same with Spain, same with France. That's the thing about these three teams is that they're so far ahead. I mean, not only do they got NBA guys, you know, they don't need a Marcin Gortat to, like, carry their team. They got, like, deep rosters. I mean, France and Spain are loaded with NBA and EuroLeague guys. You know, I mean, they can lose three players and still be okay. Although I didn't like what happened a few years ago when Gasol missed that tournament and Spain finished about sixth. So... Well,
was that EuroBasket or that was the World Championships? You mean right where Tate Osic hit the long three to win it?
Yeah, it was the year
2010.
Rubio and those guys had to play without Pau, and Mark wasn't quite ready to assume leadership role yet. And yeah, they finished like sixth. They got bounced early.
So I found the email regarding the seeding. Seeding method for the draw is based on the results of the most recent FIBA Europe official competitions, the last being the most important. In this case, the last being most important part refers to EuroBasket results 2011 for the eight teams that were already qualified for 2013. So the Olympic teams, Olympic qualifying tournament teams, GB and Slovenia. and the qualification round results for the 16 that will emerge from there. So I don't think in that regard that Montenegro will be getting a 5 or 6 seed. So they take into account the qualification round results.
Okay.
So we've cleared that up. Montenegro will probably not get a 5 or 6 seed.
And Greece will be a 2. Wow, does this mean that Serbia could actually be a 2 seed or a 3 seed?
Serbia? Oh, Serbia.
Yeah, I got them finishing 8th in Eurobasket 2011.
Well, if they finished 8th and then they finished and they were one of the third place teams here, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so
yeah, they're the last team to get in.
Yeah, so they probably won't be even a they might not even be a 3 seed.
Wow, so yeah, under this schema, Germany certainly gets a high ranking. I mean, they got them listed as 9th, along with Finland in the last tournament, and they just went undefeated in this one. Could Germany actually go in as a 2 or a 3? Scary.
Maybe. Maybe.
Scary. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. We'll have to save that for another podcast.
The mock draft of the theoretical seeding
yes.
for Eurobasket 2013 next week on High News.
So the six seeds would be the Czechs, Belgium. Well, wait, wouldn't the 6 seed just be the third place teams? 3 of the 4?
If it's strictly that four? Tournament, yep.
Yeah, so I mean Serbia's a 6 seed.
Wow.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen, huh?
It might be fitting, you know. I bet in Serbia's group there will be 3 teams better than them.
Yeah.
I bet. I just am not high on Serbia right now. Stock is falling on Serbia in Ball in Europe's opinion.
And High News ain't buying. Well, Oz, it's been great.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for coming on board. For everybody out there, how can they catch your work?
Okay. The website is ballineurope.com, soon to be posted within minutes, I would say. So certainly by the time you hear this, will be the official Ball in Europe FIBA Eurobasket 2013 qualifying round all-star team.
Dun, 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 dun. We forgot to get to that, but
on Twitter, we're BIE_basketball, and on Facebook, it's Ball in Europe.
All right.
Like us, tweet us, retweet us, do all those crazy social marketing things, and check out the website, ballineurope.com.
Social media, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the wave of the future, man.
Yes. All right, Oz. We have a EuroLeague podcast, I assume, coming up probably in the near future.
The
season's about to start in a couple weeks, so we need to get our predictions out there.
Here's my first prediction: is the year of Sasha Vujacic.
Oh, okay, here we go. That was a first. That was a premiere.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's never been said in the history of the internet.
All right, hey Oz, that's great. Everybody get out and check out his stuff, ballineurope.com, and I'm sure we'll talk again in the future, and keep it up.
Early in the morning, I'm tired of fucking me. I'm trying to make it tomorrow, but I can't work here no more. What's a boy to do when his bills are due? Swim so long that I think I got the working boy blues. Oh, the day is finally over. I'm tired like the dead. I tried to come out and see you, but I just fell asleep instead. What's a boy to do when he's tired like a mule? Well, I've been for.